This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Welcome to Hard Currency. Welcome back to Hard Currency, indeed, the Financial Times Foreign Exchange podcast, which is returning from its summer break. I'm Roger Blitz, and it's been a roller coaster August so far, with Turkey's lira making most of the waves, emerging market currencies following to some extent in its wake, and sanctions becoming a trigger for foreign exchange moves, all of which sees the mighty dollar killing just about everyone in front of it. With me to look at the implications of this volatile August is Derek Halpeny, the forex strategist at MUFG. Derek, Turkey to begin with. First of all, we should ask, is the turmoil over? We've seen actually something like a 24% bounce in the lira since Monday, following the 28% drops since the start of August. So I suppose you could conclude it's certainly volatile, but is the turmoil over?
Well, they've taken steps, obviously, in terms of reducing lira liquidity through cutting the limit of swap positions relative to shareholder equity.
It's difficult to short the lira.
Yeah. And I think that was the important one. Now, we've also had this Qatar announcement of investments. We don't have much detail on that. 15 billion. Yeah. But in terms of what they're doing with it, it's still early days. But I think all of that is helping. But at the end of the day, there are elements of what's going on in Turkey that are unique in terms of the way Erdogan is responding. But this is quite common in terms of being your kind of textbook balance of payments type crisis in a situation when the Fed is raising interest rates. And in that sense, they're avoiding what always happens, and that ultimately is monetary tightening. Now, given the fact that inflation is going to be north of 20% on an annual basis over the coming months, even though those risks are receding because of the rebound in the lira, we're still in a situation where the real policy rate in Turkey is in negative territory.
Yes. It does have to be the main policy rate. I mean, it can't be other measures alongside it. I mean, the finance minister's just done an investor call on Thursday afternoon, Mr. Al-Bayrak, in which he says it can't just be monetary policy, it has to be fiscal policy as well. He said they're obviously trying a way that they can finesse this issue about Erdogan and interest rates, aren't they?
Yeah, sure. And of course, the move we've had, and if they were in terms of FX, that in itself is going to have some impact in terms of narrowing the current account deficit. If they take measures in terms of curtailing domestic credit growth, yeah, and other elements on the fiscal side to curtail domestic demand, yes, all of that will help. But, you know, I think there's a large element of this that is still confidence related. Yeah. And given the degree or the extent of mainly dollar-denominated, but foreign currency-denominated debt that needs to be refinanced, confidence is way more important for Turkey than it is for some of the other emerging market countries. So in that sense, restoring confidence is perhaps the biggest question mark in terms of where we are now.
Yes, and therefore the turmoil is only going to be over once there's any semblance of that confidence returning. So investors should expect more of a volatility?
Well, I think without monetary tightening, and again, going back to your point, yes, there's lots of steps that need to be taken in unison, but the refusal to tighten policy, I think, will always be an element of creating some degree of uncertainty about the turmoil coming back at some point in the future. But of course, this conference call that you've mentioned, if it's credible and if we start to see action from the Erdogan administration in relation to curtailing domestic demand, it certainly helps. And, you know, perhaps it could be enough, but I'd be dubious at this point in time.
So should we be cautious about thinking that there is, you know, that investors are after the next EM vulnerable currency? We've had the Argentine peso, we're now having Turkish lira. There's a knee-jerk thought that we should simply, you know, they're now, investors are now going to move on. Are you not so certain about that?
Well, you know, I think I've written a piece today, and I looked back at where some of these countries were in terms of financing risks. You may recall in 2013 when we had the taper tantrum episode from the speech from Ben Bernanke, and we had the Fragile Five, and I extended it back then and looked at the Shaky Six, and I included the Mexican peso. And looking through all of those now today, they've all addressed in different degrees those risks and have reduced those, whether it's through a narrower current account deficit or a tighter real policy rate. The risks aren't as extensive as they were back then. So that's an important point to make. But I think obviously the dynamic has changed a little bit now relative to back then. And we're in a situation today where I think it's really still all eyes on China to an extent, because that's where you're seeing the slowdown. That's where, if the Trump administration become more aggressive on trade tariffs, that's where you could start to see something. And of course, we've had dollar CNY yes. marching towards 7%. Mm-hmm. We've had another step, which importantly over the short term could help restore some stability as well, with reports that the Chinese authorities are curtailing commercial banks from lending into the foreign markets their CNY, which then becomes CNH, and that reduced CNH liquidity has resulted
to Turkey.
Yes, but in a different way. So the forward points on the 12-month basis for CNH has jumped, making it much more expensive to short the currency.
But the other reason why investors should be looking for the next EM casualty is this issue of dollar-denominated debt, which has been around for an awful long time. The numbers are astonishing. It's something that, frankly, the world has parked and is regarded as being something we'll deal with it later at some other point. Is that moment coming ever sooner?
Well, obviously, the risks become escalated. When you look at the overall dollar-denominated debt figures, like a lot of it is related to China, of course. But in terms of GDP, yeah. it's very small because of obviously the size of the Chinese economy. But when you look at some of the other areas, actually Turkey is another, yeah. it's actually one of the worst. Yes. In GDP terms, it's about 36% of GDP, 20 percentage points in dollars and about 16% in euros. Mm. You look elsewhere, Chile actually is, in terms of dollar-denominated debt, is substantial. Yes. Now, obviously, given the copper yes. price sell-off that we've had of late, pretty sharp, that very short-term could be a currency that okay. suffers if, again, we see the US rates and the dollar advance further, which is an if, but...
Okay. Derek, why do these terminals always happen in August? It seems to be, we're all marching up to the end of July saying, yes, something's going to happen. We've got to be at our desk. We've got to watch it. Why is it always August?
Yeah, it's a good question. But, you know, I can also tell you of Augusts where, you know, literally nothing happened.
Yeah,
so, you know, there is an element, of course, where, yes. you know, perhaps senior traders on desks or the decision makers aren't around, and you know there's less liquidity going yes. around in the markets more generally. And in those type of market conditions, if something fundamental suddenly happens, then you can have outsized moves that then emanate into bigger, more broad-based moves, and actually tend to move into September as well. So you know, we again, based on episodes that tend to happen in August, they don't disappear.
No, they
tend to go into September
And leading into August was this increasing awareness of the sanctions policy coming out of the Trump administration, which if you look at Iran and Turkey, of course, Russia, all of whose currencies have actually weakened quite substantially because of sanctions, or in Turkey's case, at least a contribution to the lira's weakness. Is something going on here? Is Trump actually trying to use sanctions as a way of causing currency distress amongst his foes?
Well, you know, I guess the US realized their number one position when you are talking financial markets more generally. And I think in that sense, Trump sees the power of sanctions, and it can be pretty forceful, because of course if you have then big devaluations of currencies or interest rates that move higher domestically, that can have an impact on the population. So there is a potential greater prospect of getting what you want. But of course, there's a danger to that as well. And the greater the turmoil becomes internationally, whether it be through sanctions or whether it's through trade tariffs, at some point, that's going to come home to roost. And, you know, the S&P has a lot of its earnings abroad, and the greater the turmoil becomes internationally, at some point, US investors are going to take note. Maybe once the kind of surge of demand in relation to corporate taxation, and we've got strong buybacks still taking place at the moment. Yes. But, you know, that buyback flow is not going to last indefinitely. No. And at some point, Trump's policies could have more implications domestically.
Because if it doesn't, it's hard to see how the dollar doesn't remain in a very supreme elevated place, because yeah, there's no sign of the US economy slowing down. There's no sign of other central banks like the European Central Bank suddenly tightening or speeding up their monetary path. So you would it's having started the year thinking actually this is going to be a year when the dollar is in decline. Mm. We're now coming into the second half wondering how on earth is it going to fall.
Yeah, like I must say, like this week I've felt dollar sentiment has become a little bit overdone, ultra bullish. Everybody, I haven't met anybody who thinks the other way, and that to me is always an indication of perhaps we're close to a turning point. And what I would say is, and I said this earlier, context is very important when we're talking about FX performance. So in the context of since the beginning of April, yeah, dollar is doing great. No debate on that. But I'll give you another context. And since Trump's presidential victory in November 2016, the DXY, on the dollar on a DXY basis,
that's the dollar index that measures it against its peers,
is down between 1% and 2%.
Yes.
Over that period, we've had 6 Fed rate increases. We've had the largest tax-cutting legislation through Congress since the 1980s. We've had trade tariffs, which technically and in theory is dollar supportive, and we've had equity markets outperformance in the US relative to elsewhere. So all of that, and the dollar is down between 1% and 2%. So the context there is somewhat different. And I think the message I would give is look, and sorry, the other thing we've had is 180 basis point swing in the differential on a 2-year swap between the US and Europe in favor of the dollar. So the message is look, the differentials, rate differentials and FX, those correlations come and go. And therefore, while it's back in vogue at the moment, that doesn't mean it will be in vogue in 2, 3, 4 months' time. So I'd make that point because, you know, for me, I think there's evidence in some of the flow data suggests that investors are still reluctant to take on more dollar exposure. Mm. So because of the interest rate differential spread, hedging costs are rising for investors. And if you want to keep your hedging costs stable but invest in the same amount, then you've got to lower your hedging ratio. If you don't do that, then you invest less. And some of the flow data suggests that's what's been happening. Certainly from a Japanese investor perspective, we've seen flows actually selling of US treasuries and buying of Eurozone debt. And of course, hedging in Europe is a lot cheaper because of negative rates at the short end of the yield curve.
Yes. Okay. Brilliant point to end. My thanks to Derek Halpeny of MUFG. Join us again for Hard Currency next week to see how all of these developments in the foreign exchange market play out, and in particular, the direction of Turkey's lira. Until then, from Hard Currency, it's goodbye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.